I would like to invite each of you to listen carefully to God's voice in your heart. Listen to His voice. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid.
Hello and welcome. I'm Father Chad Arnold, and you are listening to About 4 O'Clock, a podcast on vocations and discernment. We are coming to you today from the always sunny studio of the Venerable Mary of Jesus of Agreda. With me is Father Garrett Burns.
¿Cómo estamos?
And Father Drew.
Let's go.
Do either of you know Venerable Mary
no
of Agreda?
Comments on, yeah, no,
I don't know. I've heard that name before, but only because of the Agreda part.
Yeah, so I'd never heard of her either until recently.
Agreda?
Agreda.
No, but what's in Aladdin? Is it the same thing?
Alibaba? Agrabah?
Is that a real place?
Agrabah.
I don't, right?
Yeah, I don't think it's a real place.
I don't know.
It may be.
Yeah, no way to know.
Yeah, you can never figure it out.
She was friends with Jafar.
Yeah, that's right.
She was actually cooler than Jafar. Yeah. So I'd never heard of her either, but a friend of mine, Ruthie Greenlaw, now De La Sega, she wrote a book called Mary and the Saints. It's a 33-day Marian consecration. I think it's really cool where each day she takes a saint and their particular relationship with Mary and uses it to prepare a person for their consecration to Mary. So she wrote Mary and the Saints. Go check it out. You can find it on the internet. She's working on volume 2 right now. And so she sent me that so I could take a look at it. And Mary of Jesus of Agreda was in there. Never heard of her. Venerable. She was a 1600s cloistered poor Clare in Spain. Starting in, like, I think her 20s, she started experiencing visits from Jesus and Mary who'd come and converse with her. And in one of those visits, Jesus invited her to help souls who did not know him get to know him. And so she's praying and pondering, Lord, I don't know how to do this. I'm a cloistered nun in Spain. How am I supposed to do it? He gave her the ability to bilocate. And so in the 1600s, she started bilocating to Native American tribes in southwestern United States. And when the Spanish missionaries arrived, the people already knew Jesus and his church and told them, we have been waiting for you to come to give us baptism because of Mary of Jesus of Agreda by locating to them. I'd never heard her story before. She's got several books that are collections of her writings and conversations. I've not read any of them. All that I know is from Mary and the Saints that Ruthie wrote. Now I want to learn more about her. So I don't know. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm going to start praying for intercession. Just go to these people. So when I show up, it's just right. Like, oh yeah, we're all in.
Baptism, we've been waiting for
please.
You. And I know there's other saints out there for bilocators. Padre Pio, but Padre beyond Pio. That.
That's the only one I know.
I assume there's more, but I don't know who.
Listeners, send us in your favorite top 5 bilocators. That'd be a good draft. Yeah. What if we did a draft?
Or bilocate to us to tell us.
Yes.
Do it in person if you can. Yeah, someone's just there suddenly in the studio.
That'd be a good starting topic. One of these times, we draft what saint power we would like to have.
Ooh. That is
stigmata.
Ooh, that is good.
Dibs on the stigmata.
Dibs.
Live only on the Eucharist. Those types of things.
That would be so convenient. See, and this is why I don't think the Lord will ever give me any mystical abilities, because I feel like bilocating I would just use to make jokes.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you would just want to mess with people, which is not the purpose of mystical gifts.
Oh, I would tell everyone about it right away. Like, something cool happened. Something cool happened to me the other day. I texted 25 people about it immediately when it happened.
And am I telling you, or is the bilocating me? Which one's the real me? It'd be more like a Marvel comic book, the way I would use bilocation.
Nothing good for the kingdom, just like stupid jokes.
Stupid jokes, which is the exact same reason I believe the Lord would never let me be a millionaire, because I would blow most of the money on jokes. Thanks. Like, my dream, I've told many people this, if I was like a billionaire, if you're not familiar with Wichita, 2 years ago, we got a minor league baseball team. What's their names?
The Windsurge, which is a totally cool name. It's not a
terrible
absurdity. That
horrible Windsurge name. So I used to tell people when they were about to reveal the name of the Windsurge, they made a big lead up to it, and then they revealed it, and everyone in Wichita disliked it. And the owners did the worst thing possible. They doubled down on it. Like, no, you will learn to love this. And so if I were a billionaire, I would open up a shop as close as I could to the Windsurge Stadium, make up a new name that everyone in the Wichita liked, and get Windsurge colors and make all new gear with this fake name and just buy people tickets to go to the game and pretend like this was their name. Just completely ignore the Windsurge emblem. That's how I would spend my $1 billion.
Oh boy.
It's a great idea.
Never been prouder of you.
Which this is why the Lord will never let me be a rich, rich man, which I think I'm pretty safe from that ever happening anyways. But that's my first question for you guys today. If you were a million or billionaire, let's make it a trajillion. I don't know what comes next in this hypothetical world. What would you do with your money?
I moved in a serious direction rather than a mess around.
I've got a serious one too. Yeah. Serious one too.
First off, I would be silly if I didn't first mention college ministry. If there's any millionaires and billionaires out there who are looking for advice on what to do with their money. And I say that kind of joking, but I actually really mean that. That's how passionate I am about college ministry, that I absolutely, and when I do fundraising, that's what I talk about, is I think that I really do believe it's the future, and that if we don't get that right, we're in a lot of trouble, and people have responded to that. And so I really do actually believe that I would support college ministry in a variety of ways, beautiful buildings and staff and focus missionaries and things like that.
I'm going to let that ride. There's a part of me that's just...
Because it's actually getting to a serious of what I really would do with it, and working in college ministry, I see it a lot, but not that every priest doesn't see it a lot. Training and access to mental health professionals, therapy, counseling, psychiatric abilities on a variety, from mental wellness to trauma to relationship assistance and everything in between.
Mm-hmm.
People who work in mental health are often overwhelmed, and they often don't have the resources, and the people who need it most don't have the resources. And I admire so much our mental health workers, kind of counseling here in town, and those who are working throughout. And so to be able to empower them, scholarships to get more people into that, because I can imagine people not wanting to move into that space because of everything that you're having to deal with and things like that. And so to have, I admire, there's several campus centers around the country that have counselors on staff. I'd love to move in that direction eventually, but parishes I've heard doing stuff like that. And so to have funds for parishes, student centers, people who want to get into it, to have counseling, therapy, a psychological assistance, that would be a passion of mine.
That would be awesome. And unfortunately, there is a dearth of Catholic anthropology and modern psychology.
And that would be a very specific element of it, getting Catholic people who are doing this that you could trust. You're getting good stuff. You're not being like, okay, what did they tell you this time? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's great. I like that. That's cool.
Yeah, I think the first thing is to get rid of it. I mean, you hear stories of people winning the lottery of trajillion or however much money, and it just ruins their lives. Yeah. So that is a must. And you said double down earlier, which made me think maybe I would just go to Mole Vegas and just put it all on black and just see what happens. And then if I won that, then I would have double the money and
me
I would.
And the church get money.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The first thing I thought of was a Cristo Rey High School here in Wichita. They usually only do it in bigger cities. But basically it's a way for inner city youth mostly who maybe they don't see themselves going to college, but they work with different trades throughout the city. And so they work part of the time during the week. And so they begin to learn these hands-on skills that will lead to their employment. And so it's just kind of a partnering with businesses throughout the city, and obviously has a good Catholic formation as part of that as well. So maybe, just trying to establish something like that in Wichita would be cool.
That would be pretty sweet. Be cool to have in our backyard.
A few years ago when the lottery was just massive, the golf group that I played golf with on Mondays, whoever lost had to buy Quick Trip drinks or something afterward. So we're in Quick Trip and the lottery's just, and so we made the guy who lost buy each of the four of us a $1 ticket. And so I don't play the lottery, but we were like, oh, it's so huge. And then we left and we're like, oh, I hope we don't win. Because how wild would that be if you saw a priest like, who's going to give to the diocese anymore if that ever happened? That would be so wild. So like, oh, please don't. Never before have people hoped they didn't win the lottery before. We did not win.
That we know. That's the official statement from about 4 o'clock.
As you drove up in your Bentley.
Yeah, right.
I didn't win the lottery. No, my serious one, I think it comes from, I was a pastor for a while in a parish that finances were not always easy. And working in administration in a school where, again, we had to work to make the finances work. I always thought it would be fun if I were a millionaire. I'd love to go around to some of the parishes, some of the schools, and just say, give me your most unsexy project. the things that you can't raise money for, that no one wants to buy a new air conditioning for the school. No one wants to put a new roof on. Those are boring, but so necessary and hard and expensive. And just to be able to walk it and like, I want your ugliest project. You don't have to tell anyone. How much does it cost? Here you go. Don't worry about that. Focus on promoting this or focus on beautifying your church or whatever you got to do. Give me your unsexy project. Let me take care of that. I think that'd be a really fun way just to spread the wealth around. And so I've joked about being able to do that before. And it actually just happened to me this last year. It was around Christmas time. It was my day off. So I was saying a private mass. And I don't remember where in the mass this came. I hadn't been thinking about this idea of what I would do at the, but it just, that notion came to me in a moment of prayer and just a great moment of grace from the Lord of saying, that's exactly what your priesthood is. People bring you quietly without anyone knowing all of their unsexy problems, all of the ugly things that they don't know how to solve, that they don't want to bring out in the public. And you get to share the wealth to help them assist that, to grow in that, to heal from that. And specifically in the context of that mass that I was praying, it was the Lord was speaking to me about the wealth of the mass, the idea of the intention behind the mass, that I am giving away something worth more than millions, that when I go to mass and I have this intention that I am offering for this soul or that, that is exactly what I'm doing. And quiet in the background, doing much more than any money can do for this, I am offering the wealth of the Lord on the behalf of this soul. And it was one of those moments that it just struck me all in a second, apropos to nothing, a grace-filled moment in the prayer. And I had to stop in that part of the mass and first, thankfully, I was by myself. No one was there. And give thanks and just converse a little bit with the Lord and see my priesthood in a new way, as my priesthood is as a millionaire spiritually. It is winning the lottery. It's nothing I've earned for this, but that I have been given this. And it was just an unasked for, an unexpected moment of grace and great spiritual consolation. And that's really where I want to move our conversation for today, is talking a little bit. Last week, we spoke about the importance of consistency in prayer. And when you move into that phase of being consistent in your prayer, there's going to be movements in your prayer. Sometimes it's going to be easy. Sometimes it's going to be hard. And one of those movements we'll experience at times is consolation in our prayer. And so that's what I want to focus on talking today. Maybe the best way to start out with that is if one of you wants to give kind of a working definition of what we mean by spiritual consolation or consolation in prayer.
Yeah, I think just prayer comes pretty easily and naturally. Your heart is lifted or lightened. You experience a joy and a peace during your time of prayer. That is a gift from the Lord. So it's enjoyable. You're able to delight in it. And it's something that is sensed and felt in a way that your spirit and your heart and your mind is lifted up and lightened in some way.
I'll give Ignatius's technical definition for this, and Ignatius of Loyola is really the great master.
He's the master.
Consolation and desolation. It's probably a little too technical for us, but it's good to have the baseline. He calls it some interior movement that is caused in the soul, through which the soul comes to be inflamed with love of its creator and Lord. And consequently, when it can love no created thing on the face of the earth in itself, but only in the creator of them all, or in the increase of hope, faith, and charity, and all interior joy that calls and attracts to heavenly things and to the salvation of one's soul, quieting it and giving it peace in the creator and Lord. Little technical, basically, things are going well. A surge of the heart, which has been a definition of good prayer in the past, is what's going on. I'm energized. I'm enthused. I'm amazed by the Lord, his goodness. I notice things that are happening in my life maybe a little more. I'm excited. I can rest. What do you say? Peace and quiet comes a little more naturally.
And I think when people particularly, at least I know I did, when I started off on the spiritual journey, I had the false notion in my head that I'm going to reach a certain level of spirituality and it's going to be consolation from there forward in my prayer. That's going to be all prayer. I'm going to always love going to the Lord. I'm always going to feel his presence. It's always going to be easy to be it. And that's not the case. That's not true. And in our next week's episode, we'll talk about the flip side of that coin. But first, to recognize that consolation, even of the great saints, is not constant. And so what should a young discerner, what should a person know about consolation? Or what do we do with that once it strikes us?
First things first, we rest in that and say thank you for it. So it is a gift. It's not something I earned or deserve. It's not something I can cling on to when it's gone. Mm-hmm. And so it comes and I rest and receive and I say thank you. So if you feel that, first things first, you say thank you because something outside of yourself gave that gift to you. You didn't earn it or deserve it and it doesn't belong to you.
And I think that even word rest in it and delight in it is good. I know in my experience, I'm probably a little more active. And so it's like, I have this surge of the heart and I'm like, okay, I need to go like do something with this, or I'm going to go serve somebody or tell somebody about this or figure out, I have a new insight in prayer. I'm like, okay, I need to write that down and find some way to do something with it. It's like, just, this is the goal of prayer. You know, God's not giving this to you so that you can X, Y, Z. Yeah. He is giving this to you to delight in, to experience, to enjoy. So just sit and rest and enjoy it. Enjoy his presence.
I experience that a lot of times. I'm a project-minded person. I'm an active. I like to do things. So that frequently in my moments of consolation, there'll be this idea, oh, this is the next thing, and this is really going to move people along, and I get re-excited. I'm thankful to the Lord, and I'm just talking with the Lord. It's like sharing dreams of the future. And then 2 days later, I'm like, what was that idea that was so important in prayer? And I used to get frustrated with myself, like, why am I not writing this? The Lord has given me this gold so I can go do his work, and so I can go. And it took me a while to realize, no, he was giving me that for that moment. And it, you know, if 2 or 3 days later it spins into something else that helps others, great. But the worth of that idea sometimes is just in that moment. It's like talking with the girlfriend or the spouse about dreams that may never be. What would we do for a millionaire? And we're going to spend an hour talking about our vacation home in Tahiti or whatever. That conversation in of itself is delightful and good and worthwhile, whether that reality ever plays out. And so too, in those moments of consolation where, oh, this is how I'm going to change the diocese, or this is how I'm going to save this soul. It's a chance for me and the Lord just to talk together. And there is value and good in that, even if it doesn't spin into something else 3-4 days later.
And if something's giving consolation, you stick with that while the consolation remains. If an idea or a notion, a scriptural passage, a meditation is providing consolation, you don't just move on from it because it's the end of your holy hour and the next day find something new. Okay, maybe the Lord's not done with the grace of that. Or just say, okay, that was a cool thing yesterday. What's for today? You stick with that. Maybe there's more to it. Ignatius is really big about we remain with that consolation while gifts are still being given. So if it's something that's providing that, okay, look into that a little more and stay with it a little longer.
And that's hard for me personally in prayer. Because like even doing Lectio Divina, your classic point is something speaks to you, sit with that, treat it like a scenic overlook where you just pray with it. But I'm one of those people, well, I'm going to do this chapter for my Lectio, and it hits me in the middle. I'm like, well, I'll come back to this. Let me finish this. No, idiot. The Lord's talking to you. Shut up and listen. Yeah. Is that what I need to tell myself in those moments is just be with this line. And if I never finish this chapter today for Lectio, so be it. The gift is there. Take hold of it.
Yeah, I remember one time one of the monks at Conception and just offhand said, yeah, I've been praying with this line from the Psalms for the past couple of months. And I was like, you can do that? You know, like I thought you were supposed to read them all. And then, okay, I prayed that one. I kind of checked it off the list. Okay, I'm going to pray the rest of them, blah, blah, blah. And no, I've been meditating on this. God has been speaking to me through this one line in the Psalms for weeks and months. And so that just speaks to what you're talking about.
Notice, okay, when I'm having this consolation, what am I doing? What's happening? What are the relationships that are taking place? What am I watching, looking at? Those types of things. Because this is where the Lord will often help us make decisions. And this is where the Lord will often make calls known to us. Not one time. But hey, there's a surge in my heart every time I watch the priest do this thing. Mm-hmm. There's a surge in my heart when I pray with the washing of the feet. Okay. Doesn't mean anything on its, it doesn't like, it's not a slam dunk guarantee. Like one time a guy was like, I got really excited watching the priest instead of the couple at a wedding. I think I'm supposed to be a priest. It's like, maybe that absolutely might be true. And that's something to stick with. That's something to stick with, but don't freak out. But okay, why? What was going on there?
Yep.
Let's keep watching that. Let's keep praying through that. What was in, and this is how Ignatius, this is how we'll make decisions, is through often these consolations that take place. So notice them and soak them in. And we'll get to them in here in just a second, why it's so vital to soak them in. But one of the reasons is, what's the Lord maybe prepping me for? What am I resting in here? And what are the things that are happening around me? Mm-hmm. If I can notice those things.
I think for me, an important part of soaking those moments in is we have such a saturated culture of noise. It's very easy. Like, I can have a moment in the chapel and receive a consolation. I go out to the car and it's easy to flip on the radio and I got to remind myself, no, I don't want to cut off this. I don't know when the Lord's going to finish this. So I have this moment of consolation. I'm going to go back to my room. I don't need to turn the TV on. I don't need to turn the radio on. I just need to let this kind of simmer for a while. It's like bringing it to a boil and then just letting it steep for a bit and see. And there'll come a moment where I'm like, okay, I think I'm done praying with this idea. It naturally feels right. Now I can turn my attention maybe to... I can turn on the radio or I can go read something like that. A lot of times I'll do my morning spiritual reading. I'm like, okay, I don't think I'm ready to read anything else for a while because I'll let this idea just percolate in my heart for a bit.
Another reason that it's so vital to soak these in is because there will be in the spiritual life, it isn't like this movement just straight up to consolation. As Chad mentioned,
it's not an inclined plane.
It isn't. The phrase, a normal alternation. There's a normal alternation between consolation and desolation. And wait till next week. But basically, desolation is just the opposite of consolation.
It's and less fun.
It's not as fun, but usually more helpful.
More important sometimes.
And so there will be times very soon, usually, where desolation will come in.
Unexpectedly.
Exactly. It might be the next morning. You might wake up with a headache and then all of a sudden things change. So this is not to be like Debbie Downer and be like, hey,
I think I have that sound effect somewhere.
Life's about
nope, that's not it. I'll give up.
Life's about to be brutal, but okay. There are probably going to be a time where things are a little harder. Okay. What from this time can I rest in? Because if I don't, I'll believe that this was just a fleeting thing. And as soon as I'm in desolation, I'll believe that was fake and this is real. And so I need to soak in the real, that this is true, that God loves me. I love the creator. I love created things because of the creator. And then when I can be in that space, that's going to prepare me for desolation. Ignatius talks about taking strength for the next time. Reflecting even on that time on past desolations and how this is different from the past desolations, preparing for a trial before the trial begins. Those are all consolation goals as well.
So for me, practically, it's one of the reasons I do enjoy journaling just a little bit each day. I think it's something we mentioned before, but just in prayer so that I can write down, I just had this surge of the heart or whatever it was in this experience you had in prayer, so that in tomorrow, 3 days, a week, when I'm not feeling that, I can go back to that and it brings it to life a little bit, or at least just reminds me, okay, again, that is real and true and that was authentic. And so I'm just in a moment of desolation right now, but I have hope because I know I can go back and I can read that.
I do that a lot with my Lexio and my notes. And so if you flip through my Bible, there's a lot of things written in, maybe not a lot, not that holy.
I pray a lot.
It is cover to cover notes.
How much I'm praying.
The insights I have would blow your mind. No, but when I have those moments of consolation, I do make a point, because I'm not a journaler per se typically or regularly, but I do that in my Bible with my Lexio of underlining and the points of where the Lord is really coming to the fore. And I think the seminarians probably get tired of hearing from me because I remind them of this point again and again in all of the individual meetings. They're talking about, yeah, I just had this great prayer experience. Okay, tattoo that to your memory because it's not going to last forever and there's going to be other days, but you've got to remember that in that moment, you felt the presence of the Lord palpably and that you knew his love for you undeniably and that he had a plan. That's the infused virtue of faith, and it's those joyful moments that's going to build that faith for the long run. And so I say it to them again and again every time they bring up a joyful moment of prayer. Okay, have you committed that to memory? I want to be able to ask you about this in 2 weeks, and regardless what's going on, I want you to be able to tell me about it again. Just burn it into your heart, this moment of consolation.
And it may not be even perfect in 2 weeks. We were just reading the other night. I was with some priests and reading one of the guy's Bibles. And I saw in the margins a note. And I was like, what did this mean? Probably not as good as mine. Yeah. It was not. Because I go, what did this mean? He goes, I have no idea. Like, he couldn't remember. But
like
even,
a dream journal.
I've had those moments.
Yeah. Even that was like, even though I can't remember exactly why I wrote these words down, but it was a sense. It took me back to a moment that there was something there that was still so true that I felt like I needed to write down, and it's pure gift. And it was for that moment, as we were talking about earlier.
Doesn't that happen with homilies all the time, that people will talk to you about, they'll tell you how good another priest's homily was. And when you ask what it was about, they can't tell you. Mm-hmm. And we like, sometimes we'll laugh about that. It was like, it must not have been that good. But that's actually not, that made them feel and experience right. some presence of the Lord that is going to hopefully remain, even if the specifics of it, it'd be nice if they stuck, but our brains aren't big enough often for that to occur. Right.
I've definitely had those moments in listening to homilies, and I've heard other people talk about it. It is, like we were saying earlier, it's for that moment, and that there is value in that.
We're recording this during the octave, and the Monday of the octave of Easter, the gospel is when Jesus directs, go to Galilee, and there they will find me, which is one of Pope Francis's favorite images. Go to Galilee, return to the roots. And what is Galilee? Mm-hmm. Galilee is the region in which the disciples first encountered the Lord. It's where the Lord's from. It's Nazareth. It's the Sea of Galilee. It's all that stuff. So go to Galilee, return to the roots, return to that initial call. The whole about 4 o'clock idea,
yeah.
reminding and remembering that initial call. And so what did we do on the Sea of Galilee? Walk through a vocation story. So when I was on retreat there, that's what they made us do, sit on the Sea of Galilee and walk through your vocation story. And that is a remembering of consolation and a tattooing of it, whether I was in desolation at that moment or not, to remind people. And so that's what I preached about on that Monday. That's why that came up is, am I doing that? Am I having that in the bank? Because I won't always be in Galilee. Jerusalem's hard. Tough things happen in Jerusalem. Jerusalem's desolation. I need Galilee and Jerusalem.
Yeah. That's bumper sticker quality. Jerusalem is hard.
Jerusalem is hard.
I want that bumper sticker.
But salvific. Yeah, probably. So.
But salvific. Yeah. There you go. Well, hopefully this episode has been a moment of consolation for you. How could it not? Oh. How could it not?
My heart is surging.
Burn this into your memory or just listen to it every day. Whatever is easier. But it's so good. I think we'll leave it there. But before we make our exit, I want to pull back the curtain a little bit. I'm trying to be better about this of seeing what days these podcasts will drop. So it's April right now. We're in the octave. If my calculations are right, this should come out on May 23rd, Monday, May 23rd, which means the following Saturday, we will have 3 new men being ordained to the priesthood.
Sick.
Deacon Seth Arnold, Deacon Ty Taylor, and Deacon John Tolbert. So 2 things. One, if you're listening to this, please pray for them. Pray for them in their upcoming ordination. Second, if you are discerning the possibility of the priesthood and you have never been to an ordination, go. It's going to be on Saturday at 10 a.m. on May 28th at the cathedral. If you are discerning a call to the priesthood, to witness an ordination can be a very powerful, clarifying moment. It's open. It's going to be crowded. So just know if you want to be there, get there early to get a seat or stand in the back. But it is open to anyone. Saturday, May 28th. 10 a.m. at the cathedral for Deacon Seth Arnold, Deacon Ty Taylor, and Deacon John Tolbert.
And are all our anniversaries this week? Mine's May 27th.
I'm terrible about remembering the day. I'm not a day guy.
What?
Mine's the 26th.
It's in that range.
It's my 5th priestly ordination. Father Garrett's 4th priestly ordination. Happy anniversary to us. Who cares? When you're
I'm not a date guy.
I'm not a date guy. What
I don't. I have it in my calendar. I could look it up of when my date is.
You can
is.
Cut this out if you're embarrassed by this.
The 23rd is the anniversary of Father Capon's death. So.
That's right. And today that we're recording.
Feast day.
Do you know what today is that we're recording? It's Father Capon's birthday today.
That's yeah. Right.
Happy birthday, Father Capon.
I should have preached about that.
Man, there are just so many good things going on, both in the present and in the future. And they're coming together in some weird Doctor Who multiverse thing.
Consolation. My heart surges like the wind surge.
It's we're done.
I hate the wind surge name. Thanks for listening to About 4 O'Clock. If you have questions you'd like us to address, you can email us at wichitavocations@gmail.com. You can also visit us at our website, about4.org. I've got the final word today. It comes from St. Augustine. It's one of my favorite quotes. It's a bit long, but I have it pasted up on my wall at my office of vocations because to me it speaks about the passion of the relationship with the Lord. He says, "Late have I loved you, O beauty ever ancient, ever new. Late have I loved you. You called, you shouted, and you broke through my deafness. You flashed, you shone, and you dispelled my blindness. You breathed your fragrance on me. I drew in breath, and now I pant for you. I have tasted you, and now I hunger and thirst for more. You touched me, and I burned for your peace." See you next week.